Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Season's greetings, little elf. How's the workshop this year? Making plenty of toys?
Well, actually, no, Santa. I'm not making toys this year. I'm making a podcast.
A podcast? But what about toy trains and jack-in-the-boxes and generic dolls?
Well, nowadays, parents just give their kids video games. With all that free time, they could listen to my podcast, Must Have Seen TV, which is dedicated to all the sitcoms of the 20th century.
Sounds like a risky endeavor. Especially considering how unforgiving I am of elves and reindeer that don't abide by the North Pole's arbitrary social codes.
That's just a bunch of jingle. My name's Brent White, and I'm a podcasting elf now. And this week, I'm joined by Dan Chamberlain. Here he is now. Hello, Dan.
Oh, hello.
Oh, my God.
Hey, man. How you doing?
Hey. Thanks for going along with that.
Yeah. No.
Now we're into the thick of it.
Legally, now it's Christmas.
Yeah. Oh, God. This is it. This is the start of the... Basically, I decided I was going to do nothing but holiday episodes starting in October. Do it all Halloween. I did all Thanksgiving. But really, we're just trying to get to this.
Yes.
Which is...
the good stuff.
Christmas, you know. Sitcom episodes. So excited.
Christmas, the creamy center of the year.
So, what is your history? We're going to get to history with Christmas. This is my first episode talking about Christmas in general. So, what are your complicated feelings about the most wonderful time of the year, TM, trademark?
Well, gosh. I have...
You better have the right answer.
I've taken part in... This will be my 32nd Christmas. Coming up here, which is quite a lot of Christmas.
Yeah, it's a lot of, yeah.
Christmas is great. It's fun to get stuff. I guess as an adult, I've become more aware and sort of like, I wish I see the anxiety my parents have around like the holidays of like feeling like it has to be like a big, like.
A perfect production?
Yeah, yeah. And I want to. Hold them close or grab them by the ears and say it doesn't have to be this
all
way.
I need for Christmas is you.
If I could go now as an adult, like all I want to do is go home to my parents' house and sit on the couch and eat bowl after bowl of cereal.
Yeah.
That would be just cold cereal with like cold
yeah.
milk.
Ugh.
Yeah.
What are your, where do you rank the three big holidays? Thanksgiving, Halloween, Christmas.
I gotta tell you, this past year was my first like real dud. I don't care Halloween, which is very, very out of character for me
because yeah.
I generally love the ghoulish and the macabre.
Yeah,
and
but you do costumes.
Yeah.
Or, well, I'm just thinking, we did X-Men Improv.
We did.
And you would
pull
out all the stops for that.
But Brett, that was 15 years
ago.
Oh
my God, they're all dead now. Well, you were Cable and Jubilee.
Yeah, which
are two polar opposite characters that you pulled off with equal aplomb.
Yeah, yeah. They're stuff that I had costumes at the ready for. But like, yeah, this past year was the first, I don't know, I don't, and part of it too is just like, I think as you get older, it's like if Halloween is less like a candy makeup thing than it is to like a get loaded thing for people in their 20s and their
early
30s.
It is weird that like Santa has like the SantaCon aspect, which I do not
endorse. Yeah. Well, that's
horrible. Listen, keep it reverent. But it is weird that like Halloween doesn't have an official like SantaCon limb hanging around.
Yeah.
But still, Halloween just in general is a... in New York City, it can be a get crazy.
Yeah, it's a get loaded holiday. Yeah. And I think just as you mature out of like, well, I don't feel the need to get trashed.
Yeah. I now do a thing where I just host everyone watching the Pollen Halloween special, which is about as, like, you know, intense as I get.
We did a fun thing in my work this year. We did I think would be like a great tradition to start. I'd never done this. It was a new thing that my friend Arthur Meyer came up with. It was called Secret Santaween. And what we did, we put names in a hat and everyone drew names like Secret Santa. And you had to buy that person a Halloween costume that they had to wear the next day.
Like to work?
Yes, to work.
Oh, I love that.
And that was a blast. We drew names and we had like interns at our office drop them off, or like make sure it got dropped off while they weren't in the room. So there was just be a costume at your desk. And then we all wore them the next day and we all sat down and went around the room and tried to figure out who had selected.
Hey, well, who were you?
I Becky Krause addressed me as a Christmas elf, actually, ironically
yes,
enough.
Yes!
A big Christmas elf with little green tights and a little pointy hat. And she got me a big curly wig, but it didn't fit great under the pointy hat, so I just did the pointy hat.
I love Christmas. It's why I've been saying it in all the Halloween and Thanksgiving episodes. It's my number one. Halloween's a narrow number two. Like, yeah. I do love Halloween.
The candy rules.
I'm a costume nut.
Death culture.
are metal, right? You are dressed like the Grim Reaper, right?
Yeah.
I don't fear you.
Yeah, just like acknowledge it. Like, I don't know. I love skeletons. I love jack-o'-lanterns. I love werewolves. I love vampires.
Yeah, I love good, like, universal monster style. Yeah, like, I don't really like horror movies that are just like gory. I like, give me some vampires and Frankensteins. That's fun.
Yeah, fucking Monster Mash.
Good. I love Christmas is my jam, though. Like, our apartment becomes a winter wonderland every year.
Right.
It was such a rich time growing up. I have a totally, like, really secular relationship with Christmas, but the great thing about Christmas is that you can have that.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much Christmas canon that is so rich.
Yeah.
That you never even really have to get towards the actual religious stuff that will turn some people off.
Yeah.
If they're not a believer of that stuff.
I also say the day of Christmas itself is a real hot cold situation for me. Mm-hmm. Of like the morning, you know, you're doing stuff. You're getting up before your parents. You're doing stockings. That's great. That's just that's the appetizer. Mom and dad waking up. Then you're doing presents. Presents great. And then
after things are
gonna get a little as the rest of the day goes on. Gonna get icy cold because then, you know, once it's like 3-4 in the afternoon. Cousins, uncles, stuff gonna come into the mix, you know, either traveling elsewhere or family coming over to your place.
Or naps.
You've been in your PJs all day, all of a sudden it's like you gotta put on a nice shirt, and it's like, and then all these people are here, and it's like you've been eating like crap all day. You're not feeling good. You don't look hot for your uncles.
My number one concern.
I just feel so like, because you've been eating like sugar garbage all day and like sausage or whatever.
The thing that I do love about, I think more so than Halloween and Thanksgiving, is Christmas also allows for a real sense of melancholy and depression that is a flip side of it that I also love. It's a weird thing of like, I love feeling sad around it. Like, the Charlie Brown Christmas special is the best crystallization of this.
Yeah.
Because the music, the Vince Guaraldi music in that is so like chill, but it also has this undercurrent.
Yeah.
Christmas Time Is Here as a song has such an undercurrent of sadness.
Well, just like I think like a lot of people here's a long walk for a metaphor. I feel like just as like a lot of people who have maybe been tightly wound their whole lives end up moving to major metropolitan areas like New York City or whatever, mm-hmm. because there's like equilibrium, like maybe you're a little tightly wound, but it's like, oh, your body's there's stasis, your body's the same temperature as the pool water.
And
I think with the end of the year, as everything around you dies, like as like the everything dies and gets gray and cold, it's like, ah, yes, stasis with like an equilibrium with like a depressed mindset. Like,
the fact it's just also because Christmas more than any other holidays really comes with this like sense of nostalgia, because like Christmas is so rich when you're a kid,
right,
which also like the older you get, like looking back on your childhood is both like, oh, so warm and fuzzy, but also I want to go back there, or also it was actually bad, and I'm like, it's like all these things.
What's the, I'll ask you, because I think my answer popped into my head the other day. I'll ask you first, what's the stupidest thing you ever asked your parents for Christmas? Like the most, like, why did I even ask for that?
Just, uh, for me, it's like every Star Wars figure that came out that year.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember when I was in, I think it was either 8th grade or 9th grade, I had Chris. My mom was always very, I'm a very spoiled person.
But
like every year they would give me everything on the list, even though I would color code it and only expect them to get like the pink and yellow stuff and not the blue stuff. They'd get everything.
Wow.
I remember one year it would be like, I was just like, why did they ask for all these Star Wars figures? It's just like random cantina aliens, Death Star workers. And I'm like, what?
But you've always been like a completist sort of person.
But that was one year I was like, why do I, I'm like 14 now. What do I need of
it
this?
It wasn't even like giving you joy more than like reinforcing a mania.
And now they're all like, all right over there. Like now it's like, now it's in my head.
Yeah, yeah.
What about you?
I think my number one, like, why did I ask for it? The thing that had popped into my head the other day was, I remember when the movie Hook came out, which I had never seen. I really wanted like a pirate hook, like a captain, prop, practically, like, which is, I don't know why. I thought it'd be fun.
Did you get one?
Yeah, I did.
Was it everything you hoped for?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yes! And then
I
went around, I had
a hook man. I definitely had like a couple years too where I like, I was such like a little like, I wanted my room to be like a rave all the time. So like I had a lot of like different like disco light, lava lamp, black light, laser stuff, the back corner of Spencer Gift stuff.
Oh,
like
no,
I was obsessed with stuff like that. I wanted to live in the Matrix.
Those, like,
that's
balls
where I wanted
with
to
the
live.
Electrical things you touch in your hand.
Yeah, yeah. A Lumastorm.
Yeah. That's our history with Christmas this week. We are traveling to a Christmas in the past, December 18th, 1963. Charade ruled the box office. The Singing Nun by Dominique topped the charts. And CBS aired the Dick Van Dyke Show episode, The Alan Brady Presents. Dan, you must have seen The Alan Brady Show Presents before.
I don't think I have, actually.
What is your history with the Dick Van Dyke Show?
The Dick Van Dyke Show was a... It was on in syndication in our market. I want to say on channel.
Did you grow up with cable? Did you have Nick and Isaac?
No, we did not have cable.
This is the divide.
Yeah, yeah. It was, I want to say it was on, it ended up becoming UPN later and then MyTV.
Yes.
But even before, because UPN was like 95, 96.
Yeah.
Yeah, like,
mid-90s.
Yeah, before that it was just WSBK, channel 38 in the Boston market. And
not Boston market.
I grew up in a Boston market. I just all we ate was Carver sandwiches.
Your best friend was a little tiny chicken.
Yeah. Boston market, good now. As a kid, a dud restaurant. Why? No fucking toys, man.
No toys. I don't give a fuck about a Boston market.
Yeah.
We had KFC before this. We know what's up.
Yeah, I'll push back on that. Boston market's good as hell. The Dick Van Dyke Show. Yeah, that was a sick day show for me.
Yeah, okay, yeah,
because
yeah.
It was like a weekdays, like somewhere, like earlier in the day, it was like 10:30
like
in the morning. Seen enough of it. I haven't seen it in years.
Yeah, it is surprising. One of the only, it's a show that Netflix still has for some reason. Netflix like burning through that library of licensed stuff. They don't care. They want their originals. Dick Van Dyke is still hanging on. We previously talked about the Dick Van Dyke Show in episode 2. I think it was episode number 2 or 3 with Kirk D'Amato. So if people want to hear more of my history with Dick Van Dyke Show, you can go check out that episode.
Yeah.
But the cliff notes is like, I love Dick Van Dyke growing up. I remember watching it and always like having my fingers crossed to be an episode where he tripped over the ottoman.
This episode
we watched is a sidestep around the ottoman.
Yeah.
There's the third variation where he sidesteps but then trips over the rug.
They
would switch him up so you'd never know which one.
The Simpsons couch gag.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's the, it's oh, cool. they do something different every time.
Yeah.
Not Simpsons that invented that, it turned out.
I love that.
Yeah.
This week on Must Have Seen TV, we're talking about the Dick Van Dyke Show episode, The Alan Brady Show Presents. It is the 13th episode of season 3. It was written by Sam Dinoff and Bill Persky and directed by Jerry Paris. Here is how Netflix describes the episode. Rob's family takes part in a special holiday episode. While Rob and Laura sing I Have Everything But You, Sally and Buddy each perform solos. Dan, how accurate is that description?
I'd say it's pretty spot on. Although there is a real fake out up top. They set it up as if this is going to be... You're going to hear the whole story of how this... All right, so it starts with... It doesn't start at home or anything. It starts as an episode of the Alan Brady Show.
The Dick Van Dyke Show's theme plays, it ends, and then, like, the Alan Brady Show title card comes up.
Yeah.
I think this is, like, the only time we actually see the show within a show that they work on.
Yeah, and then we're on the Alan Brady Show.
Carl Reiner as Alan Brady comes out as Santa Claus with his reindeer pulling his sleigh.
There's a bunch of showgirls.
Yeah, but, it's a bunch of
girls. Dressed in little tartlet Santa costumes, but he's still calling them animal names.
He's like
little reindeer. Blitzen,
Donna. Somebody's got to feed these poor reindeer. Donna, Blitzen, Betty, come on.
So I feel like a fucking Rodney Dangerfield.
Oh, yeah.
Lovely girls. Just like fucking creep.
It's very interesting. Latch.
Yeah.
But also, like, Alan Brady as a character on the show is an asshole.
So, yeah, you
got that context.
So he has women bound and harnessed like sled dogs pulling him around the studio.
No, they're looking good.
They're
wearing these, like, it's like Playboy Bunny, Santa Claus, and
that
show characters. It's weird. But then he brings out, we're doing something different.
Yeah, and so then he brings out he invites his head writer,
Rob Petrie, played by Dick Van Dyke,
out to explain that they're going to do something a little different with the show. And before, like, compliment, like, Dick Van Dyke, great physical comedian and all that stuff like that, he explains, like, well, it was a long, weird road putting this show together. We dissolve back to the office, and now it's like, okay, now it's going to be an episode of the Dick Van Dyke Show. But then it's only that one scene.
It's literally like a 3-minute scene just to get them to, like, to justify why the writers and the head writer's wife are doing the show. And Alan Brady, the star of the show, is just sitting as Santa with kids around him laughing at them.
Long story short, this is just it's just a variety show.
Yeah.
This whole episode of the Dick Van Dyke Show is just a variety show. Now, it's catching the idea of, like, well, Alan Brady has decided he wants all the staff and their families to come and do this show. Staff and their families are the three people you know from the sitcom and Mary Tyler Moore.
It's like the janitor doesn't come out and do it.
Like four people were, no, sorry, three people work on the Dick Van Dyke Show.
That's really cool. Like, Rob comes out and he's very nervous, which is really interesting. Seeing how nervous Rob Petrie is as the man Rob Petrie, just having to, like, talk to the audience. But then
he does this thing, he keeps trying to put his hands in his suit pockets, but they're, like, not cut. So it just looks like he's, like, wiping.
So
that's such a great, simple, small physical thing.
But as soon as Rob Petrie, the performer, gets told to perform,
he can dance better than anyone else on the staff.
It's outstanding.
He can do a Perry Como impression.
We can talk about the one bit of plot in the episode, which is that one scene in the office.
Yeah.
We can talk about that for a hot sec. Like, they're all basically like, we turn in the script, we're good to go.
Yeah.
And they're waiting for the producer, Mel Cooley, to come in and, like, give them the, like, go on home. There's a great bit of, like, knock at the door, and then the door opens, and Laura, Rob's wife, Mary Tyler Moore, is standing there with just, like, a big cartoonish amount of presents. There's that Looney Tune where it's like the woman shopping and she has she's holding all those presents and, like, they, like, remove the one right in front of her face so you can see her eyes.
Oh yeah.
It's like a Tetris, like, Jenga block tower thing.
Because whether the Dick Van Dyke Show, Looney Tunes, real life, ladies be shopping.
Yeah.
ladies do be shopping.
And they do be shopping in this.
Yes.
And then Mel comes in and is like, it was great, but he wants something different. He wants heart and warmth. And then, is it
Sally? What is it that everyone says the Alan Brady Show lacks?
A good producer.
What are you talking about, Mel?
They say it lacks heart warmth.
Mel, if you want heart warmth, all you have to do is eat a large pizza before you go to bed.
Yeah, that's a good joke. Like, you know, it's solid.
So now, to bury the lead, like, you do work on a variety show, talk show.
Yeah.
The Tonight Show.
Yeah, I'm right at the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon.
So,
starring Jimmy Fallon.
Starring. Because that is a difference.
Yeah.
It's a late show with David Letterman and Stephen Colbert and starring Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
I get really, when people say, like, you know, a late night with David Letterman, or, like, the Tonight Show with David Letterman, I get the David Letterman Show, and I get article right. With this, like, wouldn't it, like, what is the deal? Like, this would never happen.
No. Well, although,
guys do end up on the show somewhat regularly.
Yeah, we'll appear in sketches, you know, that sort of thing. Other writers, you know, most of us have, I mean, maybe that's just a byproduct of, like, And most people in comedy, very few people, I think, who pursue a career in comedy are exclusively right.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
exclusively, because you're doing shows around. So, like, you know, everyone, you have some like legs
improv,
as a performer.
Improv, sketch, yeah, stand up. Yeah. I mean, and then, like, on the Alan Brady show, you have Rob, Sally, and Buddy, who, if their backgrounds are similar to their IRL backgrounds, then
yeah.
Sally and Buddy come from vaudeville.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
Which is just
yeah.
like Rosemary and Maury Amsterdam. Come from vaudeville.
Yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah.
Well, of course.
But then, and then conversely, it's like, oh, that's why something like, you know, David Letterman putting his stage hands and, you know, just like, hey, Rupert from Hello Deli on here
yeah.
was considered so transgressive. Because it was
like, it's just as a rando.
Just folks. Yeah, just, yeah.
Or like Biff, the stage manager. Who's yeah, like, he's yeah, just yeah, a stage yeah. manager. Now he's going to the Olympics and like,
yeah,
shit like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, Mel comes in. It's like, well, they want heart and warmth. They want something with all the family. And Rob points out, like, just like Perry Como used to do.
Yes.
So
yes.
it's kind of like giving the audience a heads up of like, oh, we're going to see a real, like, this is a just a classic style.
But even that, it, in the setup, you presume it's going to be, and then it's all going to come off the rails. It's
right.
going to be,
like, during
we're
going to
be knocking over the Christmas tree. It's going to be
too much
like
screen time.
Yeah, someone's going to someone's going to freeze and not know their lines, and it's all going to work out.
But in a true Christmas miracle,
they just play it real straight. We get 4 or 5 songs?
There are 6 different numbers.
There are 6 songs. Yeah,
which I wrote
yeah.
down. Because I was like, you asked, do I need to take notes? And I was like, this, we're going to be talking more about how you feel.
Yeah.
Because there isn't, there's like,
that's sweet.
We talked the plot. Like,
yeah.
there's no, I, there, well, yeah, we'll go number by number, but just overall, this is a 5-star Christmas episode for me because it's just so, there's something so weirdly pure about, I'm a performer.
Yeah.
I'm gonna perform. It is lame. Like, there's
yeah,
a thing where,
yeah,
like, if you don't commit to dressing up like a toy soldier and demouthing, like, at, like, acapella-ing a piccolo and stuff,
yeah.
you have to commit to that.
Yeah.
Because the audience can swift the slightest scent of, I'm not comfortable in this costume.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a level of, like, intense commitment that these 4 performers, they have to have to sell something as objectively kind of lame as dressing up like a Big Bell Santa and dancing.
Yeah.
But it works.
Another strange thing is that it almost, like, I said, like, oh, there's a show for the audience. It's also weirdly a show for Alan Brady.
Yeah.
Who's just sitting to the side the entire, Carl Reiner in a Santa suit, surrounded by children now.
Yeah.
The little Santa-ettes have been sent away.
Yeah, back to the shed or whatever.
Yeah,
in stables.
Put back in the fucking shipping container or whatever they gave
Jesus
to the studio.
Christ.
He's surrounded by children. And we, throughout every musical number, we just get these reaction shots of Carl Reiner, like, elbowing, like,
yeah.
kids in the ribs, being like, huh, check that out, kids.
Well, there's one joke in act number 3, when Buddy, like, is shipped out in the giant box, and they open it up, and he's in there with a cello,
yeah.
and Sally's like, oh, I meant to ask for, like, a real man, and Buddy says, like,
I asked Santa to send me something with a shape like this, look what I got.
And they got like, a cello instead.
And then the cuts back to Alan Brady, and, like, him, like, nudging all the kids to laugh at this, like, joke about the similarities between a cello and a woman's body.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, what
that's
is
insane.
That?
These kids all being like, yes, that's funny. A woman is shaped like a cello. What
yes,
the hell?
36, 24, 36.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, overall, what did this? How did this hit you overall? Expecting a normal sitcom and then getting this not at all a sitcom.
It was very sweet. There was a. To me, there was a valley. I don't know if we want to get this. We were cruising okay. And then there's a valley, the most terminally dull
yeah.
Christmas song.
Which,
world.
We were going to get to it. And it's,
yeah.
if you are aware of the larger context of the show, it's hilarious. So we'll
okay,
get to it.
Okay.
Let's start. We can start up. So the very first number they have is like, it's Alan Brady. It's the song of them just singing basically the
just saying the host's name.
Because he's an egomaniac.
Over and over and over
gonna
again.
Feed it. So Rob is the conductor, and then, Mel Cooley, played by Richard Deacon,
yeah.
who is Mel's, who's, what's his name? Alan Brady's brother-in-law, who's a producer. And then Sally, Buddy, and Laura.
Yes.
And so there's just Alan
Brady, Alan Brady, Alan Brady, Alan Brady, Alan Brady, Alan Brady, Alan Brady, Alan Brady.
Why is Laura on the show?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember if in canon if Laura has a showbiz background. The thing, like, Mary Tyler Moore does. Obviously she does. I don't know if Laura Petrie does.
Yeah.
But they do point out that every time we have parties at your house, you guys end up singing and dancing, which is true. That happens.
Yeah, that happens.
So I guess they just know, like, hey, she can hold her own. Yeah, so let's bring this housewife out. She'll cut her rug. So she's up there.
Yeah.
And the bit is just, the song is Alan Brady. And then at the end of it, they say their name and then are dismissed.
Because you should keep saying, the joke being, you should just be saying Alan Brady over and over again.
Yeah.
But you've said your own name.
Buddy,
and now it's time for you to leave because you've not said the host's name once.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you are all doing all this in service to Alan Brady. How dare you look for recognition?
I mean, they are doing it all in service to
And I wrote down, like, it's so patient, simple, and stupid.
Yeah.
Because you hear that chorus of Alan Brady, which is not a song anyone's ever heard. No one's, like, looking forward to hearing the Alan Brady song.
It's not even to the tune of, like, Alan Brady, Alan Brady,
Alan Brady, Alan Brady. Like, it's just its own melody.
Yeah.
And they make you listen to it once all the way through. And then once all the way through until the very end when Buddy says Buddy Sorrell.
If they didn't have you listen to it once all the way through, the context, like,
you need the
disrupting the pattern wouldn't make sense, so they establish the pattern of this invented thing, and then be like, but what if we subverted this thing we just made up?
And it's great, I love, they do throw a curveball, because Sally and Buddy's follow the exact same rhythm of it at the very end, and then the third one starts, and Rob, like, starts, and immediately Laura goes,
Laura!
And then runs off stage
because
she's terrified, which I love. That
I thought she just was sick of the bit.
No, I think Laura. I feel like Laura's runner in this is like, I'm kind of nervous.
A little stage fright.
Yeah. Which I think is great.
Yeah.
And then it's like, well, Mel is my hope. He's Alan Brady's brother-in-law. He'll do it all. He does most of it, and then Mel Van Cooley and leaves.
And
then that's it. That's the bit. Well, then Rob turns to the camera, like chokes on his words for a bit.
And can't believe that he's bungled the conductor gig, and snaps his little baton in half.
He says, Robert Petrie, and then in defeat, snaps his baton. That's done.
Yep.
One bit down.
Yep, one bit down. Cross it off.
They asked America to watch that, and I watched it and love it.
Yeah, Alan Brady delighted. A little peeve that they said their own names.
Yeah. I wonder, in the universe of the show, that was the bit. Yeah, that wasn't like an impromptu.
But this was Alan's thing.
Yeah.
And they wrote a show. Someone still wrote this and Alan didn't write it.
I feel like they probably all wrote it to get the screws in on him a little bit.
Yeah.
The second bit is Santa Cinderella, performed by Rosemarie Sally Rogers.
Sure.
Which is
a little regressive.
Well, there's this, I highly recommend, I'm glad I could have talked about this last week, but I went and saw a New York screening of her documentary that's coming out.
Okay.
Called, Wait for Your Laugh.
Oh, yeah. So
which is a documentary about Rosemarie's life in showbiz. And I was expecting going in and being like, this is going to be like one of those cheapo documentaries you see on Netflix.
Yeah.
And it's like, how did they get on it?
Not for nothing. The trailer makes it look cheap.
And it's like, and you go and you watch it, and I, like, 5 stars. It is it's so well made. It's so well done and put together, and the way that they deal with, like, the story they tell of her history is this amazing story of Hollywood, because she started performing at the age of 3 on radio.
Wow.
She was the Shirley Temple before Shirley Temple was Shirley Temple.
Wow.
She was the most famous child actor of all time.
Wasn't she, like, mob protected?
Yes.
Like, this, like,
her father was in the mob.
This mob protected, like, child star.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And the mob, and, like, as she grew up, the mob, like, kept, like, making sure she was taken care of in Vegas when she did her shows. She also had no idea who these mob guys were.
She was a little angel.
Yeah. Basically. Wow. And she would tell off the mob guys, and people would be like, you can't do that. She's like, what? Oh, that was Al Capone? Whoops. Like, that kind of stuff.
And they probably all get a kick out of it. Hey, this kid's talking big to me.
So when you see, like, I always thought Sally Rogers was kind of weirdly regressive, because her whole character game is, I'm a female writer and I'm looking for a man. But when you watch it in the context of, the documentary does this great job of putting her in context of the time period. And the fact that she was a working woman, period, on a show in 1961 to 65 is itself, like, mind-blowing. The fact that she was the only woman in a writer's room of men on a TV show.
Bananas,
holy shit.
Yeah.
And then also the fact that she is a ferocious joke machine. Like, just period.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't even have to write shit for her. Like, she could just make up a joke off the top of her head about anything.
You've been doing vaudeville since you were three.
And like, it's amazing.
No shit, you can hold your own. Yeah.
So now I watch all of her stuff from this like lens of, it's kind of like Baby It's Cold Outside.
Yes.
Which you view as like being about date right now. But when you read the history about what at that time women were not allowed to culturally say yes to sex.
Yeah.
So the way to say yes to sex was to actually say no in a fake way, which is super fucked up and like crazy.
Yeah, but
like women were conditioned to, like, you can't say yes ever. So you either have to say like no forcefully or like no with a wink. And Baby It's Cold Outside is a no with a wink song.
Yeah, yeah.
But like it's the layers of context and history are also fucked up. So when I hear Santa Feller and you're watching Rosemary do it, it's like, yeah, the song's like she just wants a man for Christmas. But if you take that away and watching, I read
go so far as to say she'd settle for James Cagney.
Yeah, or Jimmy Durante.
I would like to order something Cary Granty, but I'd even settle for a James Durante.
Durante, oh, no looker at him.
Also,
and then she puts a hat and a coat on a coat rack and makes it hug her.
Yeah, it's so,
because that's her man is a coat rack.
When you watch the performance from the point of view of just like, this is the definition of brassy, which is what I wrote.
Yes, yes, yes.
I love just like the ballsy brassiness of her swagger in this.
Oh, brother. Yeah, yeah, it is.
She's so great and I love her so much.
Yeah, it was fun.
That's my like weird historical feminist spiel about Santa Cinderella.
Where did you see that movie?
It was at the Landmark Theater.
Okay.
They were doing, and it was a follow-up with a screening, with a Q&A with the director and Peter Marshall, host of Hollywood Squares.
Hey.
So that was crazy.
Was she a Squares?
Yeah, she was. After she did Dick Van Dyke, she was on the Squares for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then right after that, that's act number two, which I love that. Mm-hmm. We go into the only, like, Sally Buddy thing, which is the Jingle Bells, but it's like more of an extended comedy riff back and forth.
Yes.
With, like, Buddy's like, I want to play shit cello alone. And
yeah.
So I was like, well, I have the piano.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Buddy Sorrell, who I love.
I like Buddy, yeah.
I love Maury Amsterdam so much.
He reminds me of, like, even the name Buddy, it is like a Buddy Ebsen type. It kind of reminds me of, like...
Yeah.
Not Ebsen, that's...
Buddy Hackett?
Buddy Hackett, that's what I'm thinking.
He's
Buddy Ebsen was...
He's just, like, a... The fact that he's a short little loudmouth.
Yeah. You know, that sort of... he seems like... the reason Buddy, he reminds me of Buddy Hackett is Marcellus and the Music Man. That like, well, yeah. You know, yeah, like you yeah, could yeah, imagine yeah. him singing Shapoopy.
Yeah. Buddy is my guy. Like,
yeah.
I would love to have that role. I dream of being that level of funny and quick. I look up to Maury Amsterdam a lot, even though I probably actually... look either right at him or right down at him. We're probably the same height.
Yeah.
So that little bit is like, he has a cello he wants to play alone. There's a really good joke of like, I know, sounds like the only song I don't know is Jingle Bells.
He's wheeled onto stage in a box. The box falls on, like, he makes the joke about like, I asked for a curvy thing, and he gave me this. Carl Reiner goads the children into laughing at this joke. It's a solid joke. The piano. Oh, what's the old, like? Don't is there anything you don't know? Like,
yeah.
No, I don't know. Jingle bells.
Wait a minute! I thought you didn't know Jingle Bells.
I didn't know that was Jingle Bells.
Waka waka.
Oh yeah. So much of vaudeville and these kind of humor is very waka waka humor.
Yes.
Which I like.
You say, man. Yeah.
There's something really, like, pleasing about just, like, a simple, stupid joke.
Yeah.
And not to, I mean, like, this is the thing. This is not a bad thing about The Tonight Show.
Yeah.
I like, there's a directness to that, just like, here's a joke.
Yeah.
Here's a stupid bit.
Yeah.
We're just doing this thing. And I do think that there is a weird level of comedy snobbery that goes along to, like, it needs to have, like, at least two levels of irony on it.
Yeah.
Or it needs to be, like, a little bit more detached. I'm like, when The Tonight Show debuted, I was like, I kind of am excited that I'm just going to watch people do beer pong or stupid games.
Even that, there's less, like, beer pong and that sort of thing now than there is, like, devising, like, really trying to come up with, like, newer game formats. Like,
yeah.
We started, like, there's something we started doing, we did it for the first time with the cast of Riverdale a couple weeks ago. Like, it was, it's called Search Party, and it's sort of like a Family Feud thing, but it's guessing, trying to guess the top first search results for completing a phrase on Google.
Oh, that's great.
Like, why is my husband so blank? What do you think? What is the first, like, and what do you think, like,
stupid?
Fat, stupid, like, you know, like, loud, you know.
Lovely.
Lovely. You know, like, you know.
Sex.
Handsome, you know, like.
So ready to get down.
Yeah. Funky. Yeah. It's fun coming up with new formats.
And that's what, there's such a purity to those, like, old school jokes, or just, like, coming out and playing Jingle Bells. And that's a joke. And I love that.
Yeah. Or we're just going to do a song, like, Miley Cyrus was on a couple weeks back, and she and Jimmy just did a shot-for-shot recreation of Kenny Rogers and Dolly Parton's Islands in the Stream.
Yeah.
The Grammys performance. And you just recreate the set, and you just do it. And there's no, like, but they're fucked up the whole time. A dog is barking at them the whole time. It's just
criticize,
like,
criticize it.
Just doing the thing straight is cleaner. It's more succinct. And it's not fun. Well, when you say fun enough, it almost has... Sometimes that can even mean, like, it'll do. And it's it's succinct, it's to the point, it's distilled to its essence of what it needs to be.
When people criticize those bits, they're criticizing it as if you forgot to do a thing.
Right.
As if that wasn't the intent. It's like, to get onto Star Wars is a Christmas movie as far as I'm concerned. When people are like, The Force Awakens is just like a plot for plot redo of A New Hope. It's like, oh, you're saying that as if J.J. Abrams did not know what he was doing.
Yeah.
If he accidentally did that, then yeah, that's a fucking, like, oh, blunder.
But also, but no, at that level of production, things really rarely happen by accident.
Yeah. It's like, no, he knew that in order to rebuild trust after it was broken
for three
movies.
They must really drop the ball on that. Someone must have been asleep at the wheel on that one.
It's for those 15 months of production. I don't buy those. There are things to criticize. There's way to criticize, but, like, that's not the correct way. You have to, like, okay, that's what you were intending to do. Okay, let's talk about it that way.
Yeah.
So what they were intending to do with the I Have Everything But You, the Laura and Rob dance number, which I just wrote goddamn.
Yeah. I thought it was great. I love the physicality of I love those Santa costumes.
Yeah. So Rob and Laura,
they're almost like big, like,
they're
hoops
hula
skirt.
Hoops. They're they're the Santa Claus, and the bottom of his, like, tunic is a hula hoop.
So the belly is, it makes your body
like a
bell. Yeah.
And they're both like Salvation Army Santas, like ding-a-ling-a-ling-in, and Rob's always ho-ho-hoing, Laura is never, and he's like, who are you? And she goes, ho-ho-ho, and oh no, it's Pretty Woman. I wrote, like, her hair is perfect.
What was the line that killed us? It was like,
you're no Santa Claus, you're a lady.
And I love it. As soon as she takes off that wig, her hair is so perfect. It just falls into place.
She's really, must be incredibly young there, though.
She was in her mid-20s.
Yeah.
And also, like, her story, because after she passed earlier this year, I read a lot about, was it last year? God, I don't know. Anyway, everything's horrible. She had only ever really done... She was like the Maytag, like... She was the Maytag legs. Or like... Those are the matches or like washer dryers or something. And their thing was like legs, and she was the legs.
It's like the Marsha Belsky's Headless Women of Hollywood. That refrigerators were sold with.
I think,
like,
she might have been
a pair of Vava Boom legs.
And so, like, she comes into this, and it's like, you're
nightmare.
Seeing this. So the numbers, the two of them and Rob, it's just like, we'll get married on my yacht. I have so much money. Actually, no, I don't. And the whole thing's like a call and response style. Like, he sings a line that she, like, undercuts him.
I've got yards and yards of greenbacks and a diamond mine or two.
Why are you telling me all this?
It seems that I have everything but you.
Look, money isn't everything.
I got a voice like Perry Como.
Oh, he's good.
I can act like Shirley Booth.
Didn't she win an Emmy?
And then they just do a dance, and it is so beautiful.
Yeah. And I don't know, as a... as a performer, I really don't think I have much command over my physicality.
Yeah.
Like, I'm giant. I'm 6'4". I'm bigger than everyone.
Yeah.
I'm sort of barrel-chested. So usually when I get a laugh from physicality, it's just because I'm big. And I fill space differently. I don't think I have any, like, command of that. That's just sort of like an innate thing. And when I watch a performer that has, like, that balletic control of their physicality. It makes my jaw drop. You know,
this moment right here, it's almost like what Christmas means to me. Like if I had like a Christmas Pinterest board or something, The image of the two of them in the bell things with like it hiked up and them doing those like long steps.
Yeah, yeah.
Back to back
and
insane.
And then the ones of like keeping the legs planted and moving the torso to ring and like.
Yeah, or when they both turn each other, lock hands, and then do like a soft shoe or like a sock hop kind of move.
Yeah,
where they're
like
kicking their feet in and out.
Yeah, and then there were like little hula hoop ones and
it's just amazing seeing the two of them together and how in step they are. And I'm like, if you have those two, of course you do this.
And so unlabored.
Yeah.
It's so effervescent. It's so light.
How do they do it?
It's not, you can't see I feel like so many, for example, were you and I to recreate that right now, the look of fear on our face, and both of our mouths would be going, one, two, three, like, just like, you'd see the gears slipping the whole time, like, yeah.
There's such a fluidity to it, and they just make it seem so effortless, and it's just a thing that I want to see more shows do that.
It looks like they could walk up into the air like Peter Sellers at the end of Being There, just like into nothing, like, what the hell, like,
And it's also directed so well because it's also like wide shots. There's a lot of wide.
It's just a big, beautiful sound because it's the Alan Brady show. You're not confined to their living room or the Petrie's living room.
And it just is a sweeping, beautiful "What Christmas Means to Me" moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The depth of stage too. They move all the way down, all the way up stage. Like, yeah, yeah, it's great.
And I can't. I want shows to feel okay to do this, where you don't see this much anymore in sitcoms.
Yeah.
And I want to see shows be like, we have, our cast can also do this.
Yeah.
Let's figure, like, The Flash and Supergirl, they have all these, like, Broadway teens, and so they did they shoehorned a musical two-parter in, and it was beautiful, because you have, like, half the cast are rent. People that were in, like, Spring Awakening and stuff.
Couldn't get Hamilton. No, very, very, very busy. That's good.
It's like, you figure out a way to do that. And and Community kind of did that in there. They had a Christmas episode where Alison Brie did her, like, Santa whoopsie sexy baby number, which is really good.
Yeah.
I want to see more shows just embrace this if your cast is condemned.
I love that. Sorry, I know we're hanging on this one a little.
This one's the best one.
It really is. The wonderful thing about that, like, nebulous, like, open soundstage thing, too, is, like, you keep being able to discover new parts of it. Because, again, it starts locked off at the little chimney street set.
Yeah.
And they keep bringing you to new places in the studio. And it makes you feel like, where else? The space keeps getting bigger.
There's one moment, so like, Laura, like, walks really far away and then comes back. And
it's that it keeps getting big, and you're like, you know, you don't have that for everyone. Like, oh, well, the band's going to be over there, so everything's going to be confined to this one little space. Yeah. Like, yeah, fucking
it's
awesome,
so great.
Man.
It's cool. And then that goes right into the fifth number, which is a Little Drummer Boy.
God damn it. So after, I mean, maybe it's like, I guess structurally I can see that serving as a reset after, like, you know, this is the centerpiece. Yeah.
If you look at it, it's been building into. You know, the Alan Brady bit is very, like, straightforward. Mm-hmm. Santa Cinderella is, like, a solo number that's really confident. Then you have a two-person back and forth with Sally and Buddy. And then it goes to a two-person that's, like, really high-energy dance. Mm-hmm. You gotta bring it down.
And then we have a child superimposed over a stained glass window. just a boy, a plain boy.
Yeah.
Doing,
come, they told me, pa-rum-pa-pum.
No child can really sing.
Exactly.
But doing
Rose
that.
Rosemary could.
A newborn gift. And it's. Yeah. Even the clip I was just doing it at, too fast.
Too fast.
It was half the speed of that. I think we can all agree, Little Drummer Boy, worst Christmas.
I would rather hear
12 Days of Christmas than Little Drummer Boy.
Okay. The Dandy Warhols do a version of Little Drummer Boy that is awesome. Because they turn it into like this. Shoegaze Britpop style, it sounds really like slow ravey. It's really good. Yeah. So like Dandy Warhols.
I could see that almost sounding like a
It has like, a really good synth line
Jesus
to it.
Jesus and Mary Chain or something like that. Yeah, it's really good.
That's about it.
It's the worst Christmas Carol at all. And I said it on the couch, I'll repeat it for the podcast. Yes. What makes Little Drummer Boy suck so bad is that you can't just do a verse of it like
Jingle Bells.
You can do
Rudolph
a verse,
the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Yeah.
There's a story done in a minute.
Done in a minute. This is a story like, I went to see, they said to go see the boy. I went and saw the boy. They asked if I brought the boy anything. I didn't.
Okay.
I couldn't think of anything to give the boy.
Still playing that
All
drum.
I had was my drum. Then I had an idea. I asked the boy's mom if I could play the drum for him. And she said it was okay. Now comes the portion of the song in which I play the drum. It's a fucking god.
It's awful. So the reason why I find this hilarious and was laughing a lot during it is because that boy is the son. Is Rob and Laura's son, Richie.
Yeah.
And in the context of the show, Richie is a dumbass.
Yeah.
The reason I love the Dick Van Dyke Show is it is one of the only shows I can think of where the kid is stupid.
Yeah.
Like, I think the first time you meet him, he is hiding in the cupboards. And he regularly is, like, running into the cupboards and, like, hiding in there.
Yeah.
He is just he's a normal, dumb kid. And so when this comes up and you're like, oh, they took their dumb kid and have just plopped him on television and he's singing The Little Drummer Boy. And it just is like, it's so... And the poor actor, he's a child, is like kind of nervous. He's staring off camera. He seems like he doesn't want to be doing it.
Yeah.
And it's just so ridiculous.
That's really funny. I feel like the overwhelming majority of sitcoms, like the instinct is going to be like the kid's going to be preternaturally smart. Or precocious.
Yeah, because that's funny.
Or know about sex, or ask questions, or like, cutesy curious.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that like, where do babies come from? Or like, you know, mom, I know about the birds and the bees. Like, you know, like usually it's a little smart ass and that sort of thing. I love the idea of making your kid an alien of like, man, this is my kid. Kids don't know shit. Because kids are kids.
He's a normal kid.
Because they don't know shit.
And like, they do, like, call out during the course of the show, like, well, you know he's not, like, the smartest kid. Which is great. I think they even make that point in Wait For Your Laugh, the documentary. Because if you want to see some... Also, I think they might have color footage of this episode.
Wow.
Because the thing about Rosemarie is her and her husband were, like, obsessive documentarians. They had cameras and 8mm cameras in the 40s and 50s.
Right.
And so the documentary is filled with all these shots of like
stuff you wouldn't
Hollywood,
have access
and it's
to.
So amazing.
Yeah.
That's why I highly find the documentary. Hopefully it'll be on VOD soon.
Yeah.
Little Drummer Boy, if you do that thing where you try to not hear Little Drummer Boy every Christmas season,
and
you haven't watched this episode yet, know that it is in this episode and be prepared to fast forward after the two dance
numbers. What are the other bottom rung Christmas songs?
I mean, people hate Simply Having a Wonderful Christmas Time by Wings.
You know
which I fucking love. Also, All I Want for Christmas is My Two Front Teeth.
I hate, you know, one of people love that I can't stand is the, I hate the waitress's Christmas rap.
See, I love it. I love it.
I've done some real about faces on two that I used to hate. I used to hate the Mannheim Steamroller Deck the Halls. Now I love it.
Oh, I get it. I do hate Mannheim Steamroller.
Me too, but
a lot.
It's insane. It's insane. And the Barbara Streisand double speed jingles bells, you know, the jingle bell, 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 like,
that's fine.
Yeah, it kind of makes you feel like you're having a heart attack.
Because
the rhythm is all fucked up.
Well, I guess if it's like, if you're having a very vindictive Christmas, jingle bell. I love the Alvin and the Chipmunks Christmas albums, which I feel like are very... Like, you either love it or hate it.
I mean, I know.
Obviously.
I know Christmas Don't Be Late.
Yeah, but then they just
want a hula hoop. What else?
They have two. I mean, they have like two or three albums that are just all Christmas standards.
Oh, yeah.
My favorite thing that I they're David Seville.
Yeah.
Which I think is like what Alan Bogdasarian or whatever.
Yeah.
He does a 'Twas the Night Before Christmas scat. Like,
oh, yeah. And Scoop-a-bee, yeah.
It was the night before Christmas and all through the house, not a creature. I know all of that poem just because I know all the words of that song.
Yeah.
My favorite things to do every
Christmas. That cool cat Santa was coming down the way.
So good. And the moon outside was shining on the snow and it looked real light on the ground below. And what am I wondering? So I love it. Don't get me going. I want to do a special like this one so I can sing and dance horribly. So after we get to Little Drummer Boy, we have the final number, which is I Am a Fine Musician, which to show that this show loves party numbers, this is the second time they've done this on the show.
Yeah.
They did it in season 2, episode 2. And this is just, they all come out one by one, dressed like little toy soldiers, and they all have an instrument. What was Sally's? Because there's piccolo, tuba, and trombone. Was hers clarinet? I love to play my clarinet. It was not clarinet.
It was trombone, tuba, trumpet. Piccolo. It was trumpet.
Was it trumpet first?
Yeah.
So y'all come on, like, I love to play my
tuba. I'm a fine musician and I get lots of pay. But when I play my tuba, people throw money my way. My tuba, they love to hear my tuba.
And then they all do that one by one. And it all like layers over each other. And then they all peter off one by one until
it's like Laura, a row, row, row your boat in the round thing.
And then Laura's the last one left, which is why she plays that game again of being anxious, because when she's all on stage, and runs
like, off. I don't like being out here by myself. It's on me to carry the show.
It's like, I will fuck shit up if I'm doing a duet.
Yeah.
I will just like lay waste. I will wreck house.
Yeah.
Alone. So again, another just like straightforward, simple.
It struck me watching that that'd be a great thing for that. It seems like something that if you went to your kids' Christmas concert sometime,
right,
you'd be like, ah, okay, like, yes, we go choreograph thing, a little flourish to open up, like, oh, kind of a,
well, they did it.
Like a little, there's a little, not like dance choreography, but there's a choreography to the music. Like, it's an interesting,
well, like, they'll have to like hit up and down off one. As I was saying before,
I will say the least Christmassy of all the songs.
Yeah, which is why.
Because it's just about a marching band. There's really
and they're
no
like dressed like toy soldiers to kind of like,
otherwise, no Christmas stuff.
Other thing I didn't notice, all these songs were originally written for this show. Wow. Santa Cindefella was written by the guys that wrote this episode.
Wow.
That seems like it should be a vaudeville standard Christmas number.
Wow, okay, that's it.
I did not know that until today when I looked it up, and I was like, oh, they wrote all these songs.
I mean, the Alan Brady song was bad and called Alan Brady, so I presume.
Yeah. But Santa Cindefella and I Have Everything But You just seem like those should.
Oh, really? I Have Everything But You was great. Like, that, it almost has that same, like, I love, like, list songs like that. It's like, you know, like, I've done this great thing, but it's almost like a, I get a kick out of you. Like, I get no kick from champagne. Mere alcohol doesn't thrill me at all. Like,
there's a specific line in that song where Dick Van Dyke says, and I even look like a young, Stan Laurel.
Yeah.
Which is like, that's like, aha, that was written for him.
He says, I can sing like Perry Como, and he does a little, I can even sing like Perry Como. And he does like a little Perry Como voice. Oh. It's like, it's really sweet.
So then after the I'm a Fan musician, the sleigh comes out. Are the reindeer with him?
Yes. Okay, subservient women.
Christmas Playboy buddies.
Yes.
They come out. And they all breaking.
The only thing that could have made that better is if Alan Brady was smoking a cigar the whole time.
There's a cigar vibe. They all come out.
Carl Reiner kind of is a human cigar.
Still, like, still kicking. They all come out and they like take a fucking candy cane sledgehammer to the fourth wall by all of them then sing the theme song.
But they don't sing the words to the theme.
They all come together and they go da 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 da, and then bop.
You know, they're words.
There were.
Yeah.
And that's like a weird. At that point, we are seeing Rosemary, Maury Amsterdam, Mary Tomor, Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah. So now it's just them.
We're all seeing them. A second ago, we saw them as the characters. All of a sudden, we're seeing them as the actors. In the costumes of the characters. It's such a weird.
But then to sing the theme, to not sing Like, you know, like, what, like, whenever there's trouble, well, trouble's a bubble, or yes. whatever the lyrics are, like, that they just go, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
So weird.
Like, if the Friends cast went, like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah, so let's move on to just some stats and facts.
Rosemary, Maury Amsterdam, Larry Matthews, and Mary Tyler Moore.
So yeah, so ratings for this season, season 3 of the Dick Van Dyke Show, on average, was watched by 33.3 million people!
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's so many people.
And it was the number 3 show of the season.
Wow.
This was the highest it ever hit.
Yeah, I don't suppose you know what night it aired on. Like, was it like a Tuesday's night? Like,
oh no, I didn't. I feel like it was just like a Tuesday. Yeah, it was definitely. I think it was a weeknight show.
Yeah.
This was the most watched season of the 5 seasons. So season 3 was like a peak.
Huh.
And then it like went down to like 20 something. So it never like got super unpopular. The top 5 shows for that season, the 1963-64 season, were number 5, The Andy Griffith Show. 4, Petticoat Junction. 3, The Dick Van Dyke Show. 2, Bonanza. And 1, Beverly Hillbillies.
Buddy, now that's Buddy Epps.
That's Buddy Epps.
That's Buddy Epps.
Now that's Buddy Epps.
Now there's a Buddy Epps. Petticoat Junction Cowboy Show. Never seen it.
Petticoat Junction, you know there's the Hooterville universe, which is Petticoat Junction started first. They spun off Beverly Hillbillies.
Oh.
Because that's set in Hooterville. Beverly Hillbillies moved from Hooterville to Beverly Hills.
Is Petticoat Junction a comedy?
Yes, it's a sitcom. And then Green Acres is set in Hooterville. And all 3 of them aired at the same time.
Wow.
They all borrowed characters from each other.
The Hooterverse.
It's the Hooterverse. And there are general, like, supporting recurring characters that were on Petticoat Junction and Green Acres at the same time.
Huh.
There's one actor that, between those 2 shows, did 300 episodes of television.
Wow. So, it's sort of like the Miller Boyette.
Yeah, it's really nuts.
Neat.
But that top 5 is like Andy Griffith, rural, Petticoat Junction, rural, Dick Van Dyke, urban, Bonanza, western, Beverly Hillbillies, rural and urban.
Yeah, no, what are the, with the extent of, like, you got the middle on ABC, you got the ranch on Netflix, what are the other rural sitcoms right now, or comedies right now?
Oh, well, there was, like, Last Man Standing, that just
but
ended.
But that's gone.
You're yes.
Like, and that didn't even run, that was only, like, 3 seasons.
No, it ran, like, 5.
Oh, yeah?
See, there was the controversy, it ran a full, like, 5, it ran so long
yeah,
that
Turner just didn't fucking get there, like, sometimes shows just get canceled, man, like, it's got nothing to do with your politics.
It was
like,
canceled because it reached the point where, like, ABC was going to start paying for it, because, like, their initial contract was for, like, 5 seasons with the production company.
Yeah.
So they fulfilled their contract. They did it. And now it was going to be exorbitantly, prohibitively expensive for them to keep Tim Allen up, so.
Yeah.
So, on IMDb, 92 users rated this a 7.8 out of 10. High or lower, right on the money. Because I would say this is a 9.5.
it was 7.8.
7.8.
I'd give it like an 8.5. For me, I wish I was left wanting a little bit of, I wanted some sort of cracks in the veneer again, because that setup makes it seem like we're gonna see them putting on the big Christmas show. And one of the reasons I like the Dick Van Dyke Show so much is, I like madcap backstage shit. I love.
And they do it well.
Give Muppet Show, 30 Rock, noises off.
There's Johnny.
You mean my favorite show of all time?
And this goes off without a hitch.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
Well, the only hitch was scripted. Is all them saying their names instead of Alan Brady? That's a scripted hitch.
Yeah.
So yeah. The season of the show... Oh, this was one of the episodes that wasn't filmed in front of a live studio audience.
I guess you don't need
because, like, they were like, because of all... Well, this is also an IMDb fact, so I have no idea how true it is. I'm going to assume it's true. But, like, all the costume changes in the set, it's like, yeah, we can't have an audience wait around and be getting all these costumes and, like, do all this shit.
But it's just a soundstage for the whole thing.
Yeah, so
you know,
it's beautiful. This season of the show won a shit ton of Emmys. Maybe not for this episode specifically, but just this season.
Yeah.
It won the Emmys for Best Comedy. Mary Tyler Moore and Dick Van Dyke both won Emmys, and it also won the Emmys for Writing and Directing a Comedy.
Carl Reiner,
and then also the 2 guys that wrote this episode.
Yeah.
Awesome. Who would you say out of everyone had the must-see performance?
Ooh, boy.
And this is quite usually it's easy because in an ensemble show, like one or two people will stick out. Like it's, they had the A plots. They got more to do.
Yeah.
Or it's a,
they landed the best line.
Or it's like a, like Mary Tyler Moore show. Mary Tyler Moore is probably going to be the best.
Yeah.
This is one of the few episodes where it's like, no, they all have these star turns.
Yeah. Yeah. I, I thought, I don't know. I guess, you know, I like getting he had the least to do in the show. It's like in the what do you call it, the Alan Brady show.
Yeah.
But in the one scripted sitcom scene, I thought Mel stole that.
Yes.
In the one scripted sitcom, because he takes because he's a whipping pose, you know.
Yeah.
He gets the most drubbing. He just gets roasted the whole time and gets to be a grump.
It's like, come on with it.
yeah.
Nice at the holidays.
He has the least to do in there, but I thought he was the most fun in the scene up top.
Yeah.
But then in the
Alan Brady sketch?
The Alan Brady song. He had a nice baritone. He had a nice sonorous sort of Mel, you know, almost like he's like a Jeffrey Tambor sort of thing.
Yeah.
But even now, that's fucking ruined.
Richard Deacon, he wrote cookbooks later in his life.
Yeah.
Might have been gay.
Hey.
He was a confirmed bachelor who wrote cookbooks in his old age.
Well,
so I'm kind of like, probably gay.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's tough. This is a weird one because it's not a character showcase.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, you're
talking about, like, the performer. Like, this is, like, here's, you know, is Rosemary.
Yeah. Randy and Dick got the best song, though, man. Got Everything But You was pretty unfuckwithable.
Mine is Mary.
Yeah.
Mine's definitely Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah, Mary, she got a,
Because she kills everything she's in. And then just her voice and movement in that dance are just poetry.
It's almost like an improv thing, too, where she, like, you watch her and she's a good active listener.
Mm-hmm.
And seeing, even when she's not, like, even when it's not dialogue, you're drawn to her because she's engaged with what's happening. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Checks out or whatever, you know,
She's beautiful. She's amazing. I love her so much. A true great. Must other people see this episode? Especially at the holidays.
Yeah, I'll say that. If you're doing like a Christmas party, doing a Christmas episodes mixtape, you put this one on the playlist.
I think this is why it was one of the four that I chose for this month, is because to me, this is like the quintessential, it's bizarre, because I love a Christmas sitcom that's about like, oh, we're all trying to get home, or oh, we can't get home, or we have to get someone a bad gift, or like, is Santa real, like that kind of stuff.
Or sometimes they hew a little maudlin,
or
sometimes.
Or like, it's a soup kitchen.
Or like, let a homeless man sleep at the house or at the restaurant or something. You know, I love a snowed in episode.
Yes.
I love a snowed in episode. But
Golden Girls covers all these bases in that too.
Yeah.
But this one is just unlike any other one. It's like, it's a variety show.
Yeah.
It's a half hour of a variety show where you're seeing people sing and dance, and I love it.
I hate the manipulation of we meet a new character at the top of the episode, and you know by the end, it's going to be revealed that they're like, they live in their car or something.
The Mickey Rooney episode of Full House, where they go to this like an old man's store, and he's like, "I'm trying to return this. You're not gonna. He's a mean old man. It means he misses. He hasn't seen his family in so long." Like,
You feel jerked around after
this. Makes you feel good.
Lift it up. Makes you feel Christmassy.
Feel Christmassy, and it's great.
Like I tell you, the Christmas season. Is a Moga Coco gang. This episode's a marshmallow. A big, juicy marshmallow.
Wow, thank you so much for coming out and talking about this weirdo episode. This beautiful, beautiful episode.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Where can people find you on the internet if they want to talk to you about specifically this and only this?
Only this. You can follow me on Twitter at AMFMPM. And, and I do shows around and that sort of thing. And watch The Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon weeknights at 11:30 on NBC.
Or on YouTube.com/
Fallon tonight, I want to say.
Yeah.
Cool, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Bye bye. Merry Christmas.
I really like that podcast. That was a good
job. Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And that does it for this week's episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guest Dan Chamberlain for dropping by and talking about the Dick Van Dyke Show with me and bearing with all of my elf dreams and Christmas wishes. I'm horrible. I'm great. Next week, I'll be discussing, get ready for it. Christmas Holiday Gauntlet's going to continue next week with the Mary Tyler Moore Show episode, Christmas and the Hard Luck Kid 2. Yes, it is the sequel to another episode from another show that actually has nothing to do with this episode, so that Roman numeral is misleading. We'll get into that in the episode. And also, I think that Hulu might actually not list the numeral. Anyway, Christmas and the Hard Luck Kid 2 is in season 1 of the Mary Tyler Moore Show. It is episode 14, and you can stream the Mary Tyler Moore Show on Hulu, or you can buy this episode on Amazon or iTunes, and I decree it worth it because this is one of the best holiday episodes of all time. Until then, you can send your questions about sitcoms to musthaveseentv@gmail.com. I will answer any that you have that I can't answer. You can follow the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at MustHaveSeenTV. If you like what you've heard, please rate and review the show in iTunes. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brett White. You can also read the words that I write at Decider.com, including a sitcom Christmas episode advent calendar that I will be doing for work that will be kicking off on December 1st. You can also check out my sitcom t-shirts and stickers at tpublic.com/user/Brett White. The theme song this week is the overture from the 60s Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer Rankin Bass amazing Christmas special that I expect all of you are watching on a loop when you're not watching the sitcoms I tell you to watch. Thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Thanks to all of y'all for listening, and I'll see y'all next week on Must Have Seen TV.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.